Hello, it's August 24th, 2016, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. My name is Peddlin' Ron Maniza, here at WHUS 91.7 Stores. And if you have a question or a comment or would like to contribute, you can call or text us at 860-486-9487. You can email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. And you're listening to Bicycle Talk, which is a show about bicycle advocacy, bicycle culture, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. And I'm here with my lovely co-host, Fran Storch, who's looking lovelier than ever right now because she just completed a really wonderful ride called the Steeplechase Bike Tour. I'm going to get back to that in just a second. Before that, I have to go... And I have to tell you one other thing. If you're listening to this in podcast, please just email me with comments at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. One more thing, Ron's rant of the day. I have to talk every week. I want to put the new rant out because there's always a rant. There has to be a rant, right? That's what it's all about. My rant this week is garbage on the roads. Yeah, I know. That's really a disappointing rant, isn't it? Garbage on the roads. Why am I ranting about garbage on the roads? Because as a cyclist, and as all my other friends as cyclists, we don't generally throw our used glass bottles down on the road and smash them on the road because we don't carry them with us for the first at first. One thing that we do throw down on the road a lot are banana peels. So anyway, as far as garbage on the road goes, banana peels are to be tossed off the road, please, where they are biodegradable and beneficial to our society in general. Please don't throw them on the road. But garbage on the roads. Folks, if you are a person in a car and you are driving down the road, please do not clean your car out while driving down the road. It's number one, it's illegal. There is a fine involved with that, and you really shouldn't do it. And secondly, we don't need to see that as people that are walking and or cycling down the road. We do not need to see your garbage. We really don't care about your garbage. So please don't throw your garbage on the road. Also, when you throw out things like bottles, they can shatter on the road and there's glass everywhere and then you get flat tires, which is wonderful for us as far as cyclists go. Also, if you throw out anything that is metal and sharp, we can also have experience with flat tires. It's just not only is it not very nice, it's also dangerous for us. So please don't do that. That's my rant of the day. Garbage on the road. Fran, you have anything to add to garbage on the road, or are you good with garbage on the road?
I am not good with garbage on the road.
I didn't think you were.
No, it's really, really bad.
It's annoying. It's really annoying.
Annoying is, it's dangerous.
And
it's terrible.
Dangerous. Right.
I mean, the worst one is glass and other things that can cut your tires.
Right.
Getting a flat is really bad. I mean, getting a flat can happen at a really dangerous spot. It can make it hard to handle your bike. And the thing is, you know, when we talk about that 3-foot rule,
mm-hmm.
the 3-foot rule is we need to be able to ride in a spot that's as safe as deemed by the cyclist. Sometimes we have to ride out in the road because somebody threw a whole bunch of glass in the road because they were drinking beers in the car and then they decided they're going to throw the bottle out the car because they don't want to have trash in the car or they don't want to get caught. Don't want to get caught by whoever, by parents or spouses or whoever for
parents,
drinking.
Parents, spouses, or police if they
that's
happen
right.
to pull them over and they happen to find empties in the car.
Exactly. It's really terrible. I mean, people shouldn't be drinking in the car, but even if you were, you got to find something else to do. If you have to have that beer in the car, which you shouldn't be doing, please don't throw it on the road. It is so dangerous.
It is.
And any obstacles, just so you know, if you're one of those people who are like, well, bicycles shouldn't be on the road. Well, yes, we should. There are laws governing whether we should be on the road or not. So, of course, we should be on the road. If you want to have less issue with us on the road, Don't throw your garbage out. Because then we have to, because the law in Connecticut says that we are allowed to ride as far out into the road as we need to be safe. It is not safe for me to ride over your broken glass, your pieces of metal, your nails, your screws, your corrugated cardboard, your trash from McDonald's even.
And we don't want your diapers either.
No, but people do. You know what? The diapers aren't so bad.
Well, because they're, well, there's they're what's soft. In the diapers is bad, isn't it's, bad.
But it, no.
The diaper itself is not biodegradable.
Quite honestly, riding through, no, that's bad. It's because of the biodegradable piece, but you're less likely to have a diaper accident. Although, if the diaper gets soaked in the rain, then it could become very slippery. Yes.
Yeah. So the point being that don't throw your garbage out on the road, because every piece of garbage that's out in the road when we're riding our bicycles down the road, we are going to have to avoid in some way so that we are safe. And when we avoid it, we are going to come further out into the road in order to do that. So if you're annoyed with us being on the road, don't throw your garbage on the road.
And if we don't avoid it and we get hurt or we go down, then you have that problem as well.
Yeah,
we're going to be dangerously in the road in a way you don't want us to be.
Wow, that's a rant that went a lot longer than I thought it was going to go.
Well, it's important.
It is important. It's very important. So I have a few other things here to cover today. One of them is I taught a spin class this morning at our local community center. And who shows up but my friend Bob after his cross-country venture in 31 days crossing the country. And he said it was a great experience. They had one day off the day that they took the ferry across Lake Michigan. And then they were on their bikes continually from that point on. He said it was very hard. It was very tiring. And he's glad to be home. So anyway, big shout out to Bob. Thanks for sharing your experiences with us. I have a couple of postcards back at the community center that he sent to us, too, to let us know what was going on. Another shout-out goes to Mike Beatty from Mansfield, who is still riding his bicycle around the perimeter of the United States to bring awareness and attention to feeding our vets. Big shout-out to Mike. I Facebook messaged him last week to figure out when he's coming back, and he says he will be back in the Mansfield area. It's looking like sometime early September will be when he crosses over into Connecticut and rides back into Mansfield. So I am hoping that I will be able to have the time to ride with him on that final day as he comes back home. And if anyone would like to contact me on that and join me on that, I think that would be a really, really cool thing to bring him in with a bunch of bicycles. So if you are interested in that, again, email me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com, and we can set up a time that we can arrange to bring Mike in. Mike currently, by the looks of things, I saw a very beautiful picture of Niagara Falls. So he is as far over, he's over by Buffalo, New York, in that area right now, and he's working his way across from that point. So we will see him pretty soon. He's getting very, very close. And 12,000-mile trip, 12,000 miles, and he's riding to feed our vets. So that's a beautiful thing. Another thing on the list, Steeplechase Bike Tour. I know we talked about this just a few seconds back, but I'd like to do a little wrap-up on the Steeplechase Bike Tour. Another incredibly successful year of the Steeplechase, the 25th year anniversary. We had some really, really nice things happen. First of all, the weather, for the most part, except for a few of you 100-milers, cooperated for everyone, and we somehow came out of it fairly dry. There was a little bit of moisture in the morning, kind of a very, very heavy dew point in the morning. But the dew point actually got to be less as the day went on, so it wasn't as uncomfortable as originally anticipated. We had a total of 348 riders, which is a nice group of riders. Everyone had a great day. We got lots of positive comments. Monies went to good causes in the area. As you remember, last week I had Lee Duffy on from the No Freeze Shelter, who talked a little bit about Steeplechase with me. So anyway, it was just a great day. And of course, you know, when I look over here at my lovely co-host, Fran Storch, and I see the glow from her because she got to ride her bicycle a long ways and was and had a very happy moment with a bunch of friends. That's a beautiful thing.
It was. We had a great time. It was a really great day. As usual, it's a beautiful route. I mean, I'm used to the route, but it's really a lovely route. And it's funny because, you know, you go on organized rides and usually you go somewhere away to go on an organized ride and you don't know where you're going and it's a treasure hunt. This ride, I know every inch of the ride. So I know what's coming up. I know to expect what hills to expect. I know
you know how hard the hill is and how long the hill might be.
I know County Road. I know County Road is where you're, you know, most likely to cramp. And
you know, County Road has a bigger buildup than it needs because
you haven't been on it in years.
Well, yes, I have. County Road is, you know, because I talk to a number of people after the ride because I like to do a little bit shorter ride. And that way I can kind of interview people afterwards to get some feedback from them because I put together all the routes for that ride. So I want to hear what people have to say about it. I can't wait to look at the pile of suggestions. We had a suggestion box this year, too. And we also had an online suggestion for that particular ride. So anyway, I can't wait to see what people have to say because the people that I spoke to directly were thrilled with it. And when I mentioned County Road, it was a group that was from the middle part of the state that they come out and do it every year. And they all said, oh, it's not that bad. It's not that. And then this one guy kind of grumbled about it. And he said, oh, that County Road, 70 miles under the rides. And he's growling and grumbling. And I said, I'm sorry, but there's no way out of Woodstock Valley except the easiest way, which you came in. So you got to go out one of the other ways. And they all just looked at me and they started laughing. I said, don't listen to him. He grumbles about everything.
So, see, I wouldn't mind it. I can do it technically. Like, you know, App Gap, I had to walk part of App Gap. Of course, it was 70 miles into the ride.
Sure.
And I had just climbed two other gaps before that. And so my legs are pretty cooked.
But it's also 28. Well, it's also 18%, right?
Yeah.
So,
and there's nothing like that on County Road. County Road is it's a bunch of steps. And I don't know what the...
There are some double digits on it, but they're very short. And then they plateau.
It's definitely doable. The issue for me is not being able to do it. The issue is whether I'm going to cramp because it's really far into the ride and you're going to get there at a time of day when it's really hot.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're more likely to have those problems, unfortunately. And so, you know, I did the best I could at Woodstock. Woodstock, by the way, is a fantastic rest stop. It was staffed by Michelle Marin Kucher, who is, and her son Nathan. And that's Diane Marion, my favorite massage therapist's daughter.
Mm-hmm.
So I've known Michelle for many, many years, and sometimes her husband Doug rides the ride.
Right.
But Michelle is a member of that, and her family, a member of that church. What is it? It's the Baptist Church in Woodstock?
I'm not sure if it's Baptist or not.
It's a lovely church.
But it is, it's a beautiful church, and it's, you know, it's got, it has that pristine New England church look to it.
Said that, you go in and you go into the multipurpose room, and they have a really nice kitchen. They have really nice bathrooms, and that church does a really nice spread. They have a drink there that's a ginger apple cider vinegar salt drink.
Wow.
So they get it that you're at mile 70 of a century ride, and they basically have lunch. They have they had homemade gluten-free bars that had like peanut butter and chocolate and dates and almonds, and they were so good. And they have olives, they have cheese, they have eggs, they have salt, they have that ginger drink, they have a couple of kinds of Gatorade. And they have grapes, and they have gluten-free treats too. They have gluten-free cookies and bars.
Mm-hmm.
That they just go all out. They're amazing.
So if you're an organizer of an event like this, consider talking to your athletes and asking them what it is that they really desire for something like this.
Yes.
Because there are lots of little tricks like that. The other, I have to shout out to Scotland Center.
Yeah.
Oh my God, those folks. They get it also. They also get it.
Well, yes, because they have the
fruit.
They
do a wonderful job. They have lots of fruit.
Fruit.
And what they had this year, which stood apart from everything else that they did, and I just went crazy, is one of the gentlemen was sitting there with his pride tomatoes.
Yes.
And he had a lot of tomatoes from his garden, and he had cut them up in little pieces, and you could grab a tomato slice, and you could and then he had a salt and pepper shaker there.
Perfect.
And you just sprinkled some salt on them, and I ate so many of those tomatoes.
Yes, brilliant.
And I looked at him and I said, "Who did this?" You know, all the people are sitting behind the table. I said, "Who did the tomatoes?" And he goes, "Those are mine." And he was very proud and he was beaming about them. I said, "This was brilliant." I said, "This was absolutely brilliant." He said, "You know, I debated on bringing them. I just didn't really know if you guys would eat them."
I said,
"You hit it right you hit the nail on the head." And the reason is because you get to sprinkle salt on them, which you really want the salt. They're really juicy.
In theory, you can put salt on other fruit.
Well,
it's just that it tastes better on the tomatoes.
But it was really good on the tomatoes.
You know, if you go to South America and you get a fruit drink, you can go anywhere and get a fruit drink. Like if you're in Brazil and we had the Olympics.
Right.
If you go to a juice bar in Brazil, they'll give you whatever lovely tropical fruit mixture you're going to get. And you know how we're used to having salt around the rim of the margarita glass?
Right.
They do that with fruit drinks down there because you need the salt because it's tropical and you're sweating a lot.
Yes. Yes.
So you put the salt on they had oranges and watermelon. See, that's one of the things that you need on a really hot ride. You need juicy, watery fruit. So grapes work, watermelon, oranges, the tomatoes, I agree with you, were fabulous, inspired. Especially because they were local and they're in season right now.
Right, right. Very
yes.
much so. Yeah. Yeah. So, it's just pay attention to, we like things that we can digest very easily.
That
can go in really easily.
That's right.
And then we do like a little protein. That's always nice too. So, peanut butter is good. I just I don't eat peanut butter and jelly sandwiches any longer because most of the things at rest areas are covered with they have gluten type bread, which I can't eat, but I will take I'll take peanut butter and put it on a banana and then eat that, and then that's a nice little rest stop thing too. Another thing that I love is potato chips. And I like potato chips because, again, it's the salt. I'm after the salt. I'm riding my bike a lot. I'm sweating a lot. And, boy, it's really, really nice to have all that. So, anyway, those are the big, big shout-out to the gentleman. And I'm so sorry. I can't remember your name. But the gentleman who brought the tomatoes at the Scotland rest stop, great idea. Great idea. I never would have thought of it. And it was probably one of the nicest things that I had. So Scotland is always pretty good, but they're all good. All the rest stops are good. The one in Lebanon was very good, and they were extremely busy this year because they got three different rides coming in at the same time. So there was a lot going on there. But anyway, Steeplechase, again, great ride, great day. A shout out to Colchester Dental for raising more money than anybody else out there as far as a group collectively. And they won the trophy this year, so that's kind of a neat thing. The Thread City Cyclers were second, and the third place finisher was HST Real Estate. So they all contributed largely to putting money on the tables of the organizations that were in need. So it's a really nice thing, really, really nice thing. And that's so anyway, now we have to wait a whole year until the next one.
I know.
But that's all right. There'll be other events. There'll be other things going on. You know what's going on right now? I bet you didn't think about this. We haven't talked about it much.
The Vuelta a España.
Oh, you do know. Oh, boy.
I guess.
It's great living with a cycling geek because she can actually read my mind and know what I'm going to talk about next because that's kind of the way it is. Yes, it's the Vuelta a España. And that is a bicycle race, of course, because you know me, I love my bicycle racing. Anyway, it is it's also known as the Tour of Spain. That would be the English way of saying it. It makes passes through nearby countries, but it's primarily held in Spain. And it was inspired by the success of the Giro d'Italia and the Tour de France. And the race was first organized in 1935. It was prevented from being run by the Spanish Civil War and World War II in the early years of existence. However, the race has been held annually since 1955. So it's a very popular race. I tend to find both the Vuelta and the Giro – to be two of the most difficult of the races, of the Grand Tour races out there. Not that the Tour de France is not difficult. It is very difficult. But the Vuelta and the Giro both have severe climbs on them.
Whoa, you should see who has the camisa roja right now.
Oh, yeah? Yeah, explain.
It's a Colombian. Okay, so first of all, the camisa roja, like in the Tour de France, they have the yellow jersey, the maillot jaune.
The maillot jaune,
which is you are the person that has thus far completed the whole tour in the least amount of time. And so in the Tour de France, it's a yellow jersey. You get to wear the yellow jersey, and you get to wear the yellow jersey until somebody unseats you as completing the whole thing, all the days that you've been out, everyone's been out, in the least amount of time.
Right.
And so in the Giro d'Italia, they have a maglia rosa, which means a pink jersey.
Right.
And in the Tour of Spain, they have a camisa roja, which is a red jersey.
Which is a red jersey.
Yes. And so the guy who's in the red jersey now, it's a dude from Colombia, surprise, surprise.
Well, surprise, surprise.
His name is Darwin Arapuma.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. I saw that. Yeah, he's currently in the lead. Now it's day five, so we've got a ways to go here. It is stage six. We've got some more stuff coming up, but anyway, we're at stage five, and it's 156 kilometers. So be a good race today. Should be a really good race, and it's just another one of those wonderful, exciting, you know, bicycle races. If you like bicycle racing, which I do, it's just something that we don't pay attention to a lot in the United States. But those of us who ride bicycles, for those of us who ride bicycles and are interested in it, it's a fun thing. It's definitely a very fun thing. So anyway, it's Vuelta time. And I think that you can get a lot of information if you go online. The Vuelta has its own page. They have some live broadcasts there. I don't know what kind of coverage we're getting here in the U.S. on television right now. I would have to check that and see, and I'll probably know more about that by next week. But anyway, it's just really fun. It's bike racing again, so it's a good time, and I just can't seem to get enough of it. This is probably the last of the really big tours that we're going to be dealing with right now. So it's going to be the last big production.
Yesterday had a patient come in, and she and her husband ran around following the Tour of Utah.
Oh yeah, the Tour of Utah. That was here in the U.S.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
In Utah.
Yeah. Yes.
They ran around. It's a 7-day tour.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a bunch of tours that happen in different states in the U.S.
Tour of California is another one. There was one here on the East Coast for a while, but it kind of died out, and I'm not really sure what happened. It started down in Pennsylvania, worked its way north up to it went up that really nasty, ugly thing in New York. There's a really steep climb, and I can't think of the name of it, Devil's Kitchen or something like that. Something horrible. But, it's just one of those, a real leg breaker kind of thing. We do have more of that happening here in the U.S., and it's really nice if we can see more of that. It requires an awful lot of revenue in order to run an operation like that. So until the American, I guess, viewing audience becomes more interested in watching bicycle racing on TV, because that's where most of the money comes from, is television rights, you're probably not going to see it as much as you do over in Europe, where it's like football in Europe, or soccer, as we call it here in the U.S. So it's a really, really big deal over there. And so anyway, we'll hopefully be able to keep our eyes on it. It runs from Saturday, August 20th until Sunday, September 11th. And it's a total distance of 3,315 kilometers. So it's very, very intense. 7 flat stages, 12 hill and mountain stages, 1 individual team time trial, and 1 team time trial. And the time trial is simply the race against the clock. They start you out You go as fast as you can. When you finish, that's your time. The team time trial is a little bit more involved. And with the team time trial, you are working with your team members and you're collectively working together in a pace line. And you are just really trying to take even pulls and work together as a team to get the average speed up even a little bit higher. And it's very, very difficult. And I believe that usually most team time trials have a minimum requirement of finishers. So if you start with, let's say you start with seven starters, like all teams will either start with seven or nine starters, depending on which race it is. And they're working together the whole way, and they have to finish with, let's say if it's seven, they have to finish with five, so they count the first five as the finish of the race. So it's really important to keep everyone together. The strategy involved in a team time trial is to take those two incredibly strong riders that you know won't be able to last for a long time and use them at the beginning as your workhorses. So a couple of the domestiques or the workers for the team will put in some what we call valiant efforts, and they will just put it out there as hard as they can, and then eventually they may drop off. That's one strategy. The other strategy is that everybody works together, everybody contributes, and you make it all happen like a giant machine going down the road. But as the time trial stage gets a little bit tricky, where there are tricky turns or maybe a little bump in the road or whatever, where there are some riders that are weaker there than others. And of course, if you have a really windy and twisty finish, you're better to go through it with less riders than you are with more riders, because you'll be able to negotiate and navigate the roads better when you're like that. So anyway, Other distinctive aspects of the race: 29.4 kilometer individual time trial. That's a good one. The 39 kilometer team time trial. There are 51 summits on this race. Think about that. So 51 summits. We're not talking about a little hill here. We're talking about like serious climbs with a big old hill in it, and 51 summits. That's why
App Gap or worse.
Well, I would think yes, like App Gap or worse. I have seen in the Vuelta, I've seen over 20% on some of the climbs.
Ew.
Yeah, it's ugly. It's really ugly. And if you want to know what over 20% is and you're unfamiliar with that kind of steepness on your bicycle, think of climbing stairs, but on your bicycle.
Yeah. Or Horse Barn Hill. What's Horse Barn Hill at the top?
Horse Barn generates up to about 17%.
Oh.
So that's our local hill here on the University of Connecticut campus.
Do we have any 20%ers in the town of Mansfield, like Gurleyville not Gurleyville?
None that I am aware of.
Okay.
Now, I have not gone out and actually, you know, physically measured all of the climbs of Mansfield, so
yeah.
I'm not sure exactly, but I'll bet there are short segments that could come very close to that.
Yeah.
But Horse Barn is 17% at its steepest point. It's not for very long.
That's right.
It's, you know, you're over it pretty quickly.
It. Yeah.
But it is a leg breaker, because once you get
it's
over
tough.
It, you still have to go up again.
Yes.
You're still climbing.
Yes.
So and Gurleyville's like that too. Gurleyville's
pretty nasty.
Has some pretty steep stuff.
In both
on
directions.
It. Yeah.
If you start at Chaffeyville Four Corners,
yeah.
You go in either direction, it's pretty harsh.
So Mansfield, no. Hampton, on the other hand,
I believe
has Hammond Hill Road.
Hammond Hill Road.
Is supposed to be, and you can check that out for me if you wouldn't mind. One of the steeper hills in the state, I believe. It's pretty tough. But then Franklin also has Robinson Road, and it's a question as to whether it's in Tolland or Stafford. But Plains Road is another one, otherwise known by the locals as Girl Scout Camp Hill, because there's a large Girl Scout camp at the bottom of the hill. And that is in the 20% range, as is Robinson Hill Road. So there's some tough ones. So we don't see this sort of thing. Now, you have to understand, when these guys are climbing this, they've already climbed for, you know, 6 or 7 miles, and then they hit one of these walls, and they have to work their way over it. It's not for amateurs, folks. It's certainly not for the faint of heart or the weak of legs, because it's a tough thing to do. It's a really, really tough thing to do. You got any results there as far as Hammond Hill? No. I don't know. All I know is that whenever I've tried to go up Hammond Hill Road, it is, it's a lot of work.
Yes.
And I'm certainly, you know, trying to keep the cadence up on the legs, but it's not such an easy thing to do. It's really, really tough. So anyway, the Vuelta is going on. We're going to watch the Vuelta. It's going to be up until September 11th. So we've got a few weeks of exciting bicycle racing out there. If you're interested in bicycle racing, it's always a fun thing to check out. If you don't know anything about it, check and see. If you want to know more about it, send me an email. Remember, it's bicycletalk1@gmail.com. So anyway, let's see, what else we got going on? We got the Olympics. We just did the Olympics. Remember the Olympics?
Yes.
It's all over. Cycling, you know, not so great. We had this great.
What about?
I'm not done yet. Nah. So the men, not so good. I don't think there was a man that finished in the top 40 in the Olympic road race.
Aww.
Wasn't real, real good. I think that we had some other things going on, though. I think we had, we certainly had a major time trial victory. The woman who won the time trial, and I am just trying to find that here, the woman who won the time trial, there's something that's really, really important about her. And that is that she's been doing this for a long time. First of all, she is a seasoned cyclist, and she is from the United States.
Kristen.
And her name is Kristen. Yeah. And
Kristen Armstrong.
Kristen Armstrong. So Kristen Armstrong, won the gold medal.
I know. And she was, 42 years and 364 days old.
42 years and 3 years? Yeah, okay. Yeah. So hey folks, there's still hope. You can be a 42, almost 43-year-old woman, and you can win an Olympic gold medal in cycling.
Yeah.
So that says a lot. It was a really interesting footage with her, because they showed her on TV, and she was she crossed the line and collapsed, and she was laying on the ground, and it was first of all, let's put it to it, it was an ugly day. It was pouring rain. It was not the best day for cycling. I have a friend who was a former graduate student here from the University of Connecticut who won the national time trial in the rain, and she Esther Salmi, she was a graduate student in the pharmaceutical division here at the University of Connecticut. And she was just a tough woman, really tough woman on a bike. Unfortunately, Esther is no longer with us. That's another story for another time. But conditions. Some people are better in adverse conditions than other people are. And this Kristen Armstrong, obviously, she really showed us what it was all about to be super, super tough. And she was, and she did a great job. And so big, big tip of the hat to her. I think we had some things going on also in, I'm pretty sure that, yeah, so the second place finisher was from the Netherlands, and the third place was from Kazakhstan. What is that? I'm not sure.
What's your question?
The third place finisher in the time trial.
Women's time trial?
Yeah. Yep.
Let's see. Was it Kazakhstan?
Yeah, maybe. Unless I'm looking at the wrong thing here, and this might have been. Was on the track. No,
oh,
there's
here.
All sorts of other races. Yeah, so there are different races that are going on, too, that a lot of people aren't even aware of that happen in cycling, besides the time trial, besides the road race, which we're very commonly aware of. There's also track racing, and track racing is done in a velodrome, and the velodrome is a steep banked track, and it is, I'm probably going to have a show in the near future about a velodrome development, which is happening in New Haven, Connecticut. somewhere. It's either going to be in Hamden or New Haven in Connecticut. And this has been a project that my friend Sue Daniello has been working on for a number of years. And I'm hoping to get Sue onto the show so that she can tell us a little bit more about what she's been trying to do for almost her entire life, it seems. She's been working on this project. But we should see, and we're hoping to see, a velodrome in Connecticut fairly soon. So that's kind of exciting. If you have never been to a velodrome, if you've never been to a track, it is worth it to go check it out. It's it's a different form of racing because they're using a bank track. They use a number of different disciplines. They do sprints, they do pursuits, they do time trials, they do all these different things, and it's all on this bank track. There's a lot of strategy involved. There's a lot of, they'll actually come to a point where they'll do something called a track stand. A track stand is when you pedal into the incline of the track and you put pressure on your pedal and you come to a complete standstill and you just hold yourself there and balance on the track. And it's a discipline that takes some practice. I can do it to a certain degree outside on a road with a little bit of an embankment on it, but I'm not as good at it as I was years ago. But it is kind of a cool thing to learn how to do. When we were back in the younger days, when I was racing my bike more, I used to be a lot better at it, and we would come to a stoplight and we would track stand at stoplights and wait for the light to change. And people would just look at us like, what are those guys doing? And you can actually balance on your bike and by putting pressure on and off the pedals. Takes practice. I don't recommend it if you don't want to fall over, because you will tip over learning. Best to learn it on a soft surface, like in your front yard or in a field or something. That's a great place to learn how to do track stands. So when you do fall down, you don't break anything or hurt anything. But anyway, so the track has a number of different disciplines, and I'm not sure exactly how many there are. I don't really have that information in front of me right now. But we'll talk more about track racing on another show. So we have had in the past some incredible track stars that have been on the U.S. team. We've done really, really well in the past, but I don't remember seeing anything highlighted this year. But I may have missed something. I wasn't paying really close attention to the cycling because television was not paying a lot of attention to the cycling. We did have a woman in the road race who she broke away from the field. She was on her own, a solo ride. It looked like she was going to win the gold medal. It was really, really close, and they basically swallowed her up with probably a kilometer to go, and that was it. And then three women went by her, and she could not get on the train. And
that was exciting.
It was exciting, but she made the move a little too early. It's all a matter of timing. You got to know when to go, and if you've got enough, you know, if you have enough matches to burn, because you're
right.
You're going to eventually fatigue. And so it's all a matter of timing and knowing just when to go, where to go, how to go. That's why bicycle racing is such an intriguing sport, because it's not just I'm faster than you are, so therefore I'm going to win. There's a lot of thinking that goes on with the sport. You really have to pay attention to everything around you and what's happening. So she miscalculated, which was unfortunate because it was so close. It really came down to maybe the last 500 meters. It was really, really close.
Yeah,
at the very end.
It was.
And
it was,
you know,
exciting.
She almost pulled it off, but, you know, I know that feeling where you're coming in and you think you have it, and you make the big mistake. And this is if you're a young racer out there who has not raced much, there's something you never, ever, ever do, and don't ever look behind you. Don't look back, because when you look back, it says, I'm tired, I can't do this anymore, you can come and catch me now. So you never, ever look back, and you do that with... I've coached cyclists, I've coached runners, and I have hammered that information into their brains, and they all make the mistake. I'm not going to say anyone has ever listened completely to that. And it's just, it's a reaction. You're starting to fatigue, or you have fatigued. You have nothing left in the tank. And what do? You look back to see how much distance you have to see if you're going to be able to last before the rest of the crowd comes in. And all you're doing is sending a nasty signal back that tells everybody, he's cooked. He's done. So we're going to go suck him up and bring him right in. And that's going to be the end of that race. So anyway, enough of that. Enough of that. Moving on. So the Olympics was exciting for what we did get to see of it. If you went online, you could go to different places. You could see a little bit more of it. We would like to see a few more sports brought into it. BMX is a sport that is in the Olympics right now. That's BMX stands for Bicycle Motocross, which is essentially done on a 20-inch wheel bike. It's a big development program with kids. We have four tracks in the state of Connecticut. Do you know that?
Really? Where are they?
There's a track in Torrington. There is a track in Bethel. There is a track in Middletown, or just outside of Middletown. Meriden. And there is a track in, where's the last? Trumbull, I believe is the other one. So there, you know, three of the tracks are, well, they're all over in the west side of the river, of the Connecticut River. But they've been going on forever. For as long as I can remember, there have been tracks
Bethel.
In that area. Yeah, well, they tend to be in the areas where there might be a little bit more money to support them, which is nice.
Everyone knows it's Bethel.
Well, it's Bethel if you're Jewish. Yes, I know. I know. You always do that to me. No, it's Bethel, Connecticut.
It means the house of God.
That's good.
It's still Bethel. That's still good. Means the house of God.
Okay, well.
In Hebrew.
There it is.
Yeah.
There it is. So anyway, that's another thing. If you've never gone to a BMX track, go to a BMX track and check it out. It's a hoot. The races are not very long. 30 seconds.
Really?
40 seconds, maybe.
Really?
Oh, yeah. They usually start them at the top of a hill, and they just, remember what my friend Joe told you when he went to his race clinic? What did he say?
The one who spins the fastest is the fastest.
Yay, BMX. There it is. Because it's all about how fast can you spin those legs. You want to see kids spin? Oh, my God. It's amazing. Their legs just fly around. And they also are on a dirt track, and they need to have skills with riding in the dirt. They generally will use a knobby or semi-knobby tire, which gives them some adhesion to the dirt as they're going through the turns. They'll go around sharp turns. They'll go over berms. They'll go over, you know, whoop-de-doos, kind of like a motorcycle, which is why they call it bicycle motocross. And so it has kind of a motorcycle type of aspect to it, but it is on a bicycle. Some of our best mountain bike racers, which is another category that is in the Olympics, mountain bike racing, some of our best mountain bike racers and some of our best bicycle racers in general, cyclocross and road racers, have come from the development of BMX. BMX has been a very, very good thing. So if you're interested in BMX, you can contact any of those tracks. There are a couple of organizations in the United States that are governing bodies of BMX. You can check with them also. And you can learn more about how you can get your child involved in bicycle racing at a very entry level. It does have a bit of an aspect of Little League on bicycles. The funny thing when you go to the BMX track is that you'll see the dads there, and the dads and the moms both are there, and they have their toolboxes, and they are cheering on their kids and you know, yelling for them when they get into their race. The race is usually a heat, which involves, you know, maybe eight riders across. Depends on the track, depends on how it's run. And they have a gate, and the gate actually holds back the front wheel. So if you're on the gate and you're getting ready to go, you're pushing down super hard on your pedals, and you're just waiting for the ready, set, go. So everybody goes at the same time, because the gate then collapses and you ride over it and down. And that's how the race starts. So you keep a whole bunch of pressure on the pedals, the gate drops, and off you go. And then it's a matter of who spins out the fastest and who can negotiate the turns the best. And it gets a little exciting sometimes. There are crashes often because people get tangled up with one another. So it can get a little crazy there too. But BMX, it's kind of fun. If you haven't seen it yet, go to the track. Check it out. The tracks are still alive and kicking. They usually go at least up till Labor Day. So that's, you know, you still have a chance to go see a race or two. And there may be some racing after Labor Day, too. And there's also a BMX Nationals. There's a lot of things that go on there. So if you haven't seen a BMX race, go see a BMX race. If you haven't seen a track race, Trexlertown, Pennsylvania is one of the hottest tracks right now on the East Coast. If you're going to go to a track race, Trexlertown would be the place to go. Although there is a track on Long Island also. And
Long Island or in Queens?
Maybe Queens.
It's in Casina Park.
It's Casina Velodrome. You're right.
Yes.
Casina Velodrome.
Yeah.
Casina Velodrome. It's an outdoor track. It is concrete. So it's not made out of wood like some of the tracks are. Trexlertown is also an outdoor track, and it is also a concrete track. So the track that I believe the folks in New Haven are looking at is going to be indoors and closed.
It's
and
in Flushing.
A wood track in Flushing, yes.
That's where I used to live. I knew about Casina Park when I was a very little girl because we used to go there and people used to go there because it was walking distance from my house.
Right.
At 42
and
900.
Why didn't you ride a bike there? That would have been so cool. I mean, bicycle racing has been going on at Casina for years. The last time I was at Casina, though, I mean, it was a very long time ago. There was grass growing up in the cracks. It was not a well-maintained track, but I've heard that they've resurfaced it and it looks really good and that the racing is alive and kicking there again. So that's kind of a neat thing. And that's not that far away. It's about a 3.5 hour drive from here, probably, if you were to go down that way and check it out. Maybe not even.
It's just you have to get into Queens and Park and stuff.
By the time you get there, it's 3.5 hours. Yeah. Anything you do in New York in the city from where we live is 3.5 hours. It's just, you know, because you have to take in the traffic factor, which is very, very heavy in Metro New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut. Yeah. So anyway, Casina Velodrome is a place that you can go check out track racing. Hey, what a hoot. Fun thing to do. So there are a number of different disciplines which are used in the Olympics. And there's, of course, the mountain bike racing, too, which I had mentioned earlier. That's another place which we have been really good at. But the Europeans eat up mountain biking. They are very, very, very good at it. And funny that they would be very good at that, as they are good at most aspects of bicycle racing because it's an important part of their culture. So therefore, you see some really big stars come out of there. But we have had some extremely successful bike racers come out of the whole development of BMX and mountain bike racing. So anyway, it's a great way to get a young child involved. And there are also cyclocross races now that are shorter distances that are great ways to get your kids involved. I will be doing a program on that shortly, possibly the next program. Not real sure yet, but it's coming up real soon because I'm pretty tied into the whole cyclocross world here. And cyclocross is another bizarre discipline of off-road cycling and obstacles on a bicycle that looks like one you would ride on the road. So it's a different game. And I will talk to you more about that in the future. And I am, after the show, I will be heading out to Hartford to lay out a course for the September 11th race in downtown Hartford at Riverfront Park. But anyway, we will talk about that at another time. Cyclocross is currently not an Olympic sport. So, which to the dismay of all of us who love cross, which is what we call it, it's unfortunate that it's not an Olympic sport because it is so incredibly difficult and it would be a great Olympic sport. It's a great spectator sport. It's really, really a lot of fun. So anyway, there are kids programs right here in Connecticut. That is another future show, which we will talk a little bit about the Connecticut Development Program for children in the state to get kids involved in bike racing. All really, really, really good stuff. there's some great stuff out there. So anyway, Connecticut is good about bicycles. We pay a lot of attention to the whole bike racing scene. We have a series of cyclocross in the state. We have a lot of different races that are happening here. So it's all real good. So if you want to know more about it, again, you can email me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. Please feel free to do so if you have further questions or want to hear more about this. The other thing, let's see, what else do we have? I had a whole piece here I was looking into, and I just don't want to, I'm going to touch base on it slightly right now, but I want to do an entire program on women in cycling. There's all sorts of really cool information out about women in cycling, and, you know, it dates back to the 1800s. So it's a neat thing. And as much as we love our bike culture, you know, that's women on bikes, it's something that has been going on for a really long time. And,
you know where the first place I rode a bike was?
In New Jersey.
Flushing.
Flushing.
Yeah.
Oh, over by the velodrome.
Well, I don't know. I had a tricycle then.
Well, there you go.
I was 4 and 5.
You know,
so I don't know if I had a bicycle yet.
I don't know if I asked you. Here you are, my co-host, and I don't know if I asked you your first ever cycling memory.
Oh, boy. Well, I do remember having a little does a tricycle count?
If it's got pedals on it and it goes forward, I think it counts.
Yeah, I remember having a little red tricycle and pedaling that around 164th Street in Flushing, which is the same little village in Queens where Casina Park is. Because I remember Casina Park. I remember Freddie Giannatempo taking his boat down to float it on the lake in Casina Park. But I remember having a tricycle and riding it around 164th Street in Flushing. And that was my first memory of any sort of pedalable thing. Then I had a little purple bike, and that was the one that had the training wheels on it. And I think it always had training wheels. I never took the training wheels off the purple bike, and I was probably 6. You know, it's when that's the bike that I had when I first got to New Jersey.
Sure.
And then the first bike, the bike I learned to ride on two wheels on, was one I really wanted. It was white. It was white, and mm-hmm. It was a Schwinn. I thought it was really cool because it was white. I don't know why, but it was a white Schwinn. Schwinns were big back then, and I think my dad took. It was either. I'm pretty sure we went to Bernie's Bicycle Shop. It was either Bernie's Bicycle Shop in Hamilton Square, or it was the airport bicycle shop by the airport in East Windsor. When there's no more airport, and there's no more East Windsor Speedway either, which is right there as well. Yeah, so it was a white Schwinn. It had a curvy down tube, you know, a curved down tube.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of a straight one, it was curved.
Right. Or as we now refer to them, instead of, you know, we used to call them women's frames.
Yes.
Because they were designed around the idea of having a dress on while you're riding your bike.
Yeah.
So you, you know, you want to be able to have it fall down between the tubes so that the top tube is not in your way. And it's a modesty thing,
too.
So it doesn't hike your dress up so you can see. So that's a good thing, too.
It had a big white basket with flowers on it and a banana saddle.
Right.
And that's and I remember in Hawthorne Lane, my dad took me out and he would hold the seat while I rode, and he would hold it so I could learn to ride a bike. And he never put training wheels on that bike. So that bike, he started holding it up. Well, for that bike, right, because I was already 7. So,
but
seven's
still,
good age.
You know, I mean, I know a lot of 7-year-olds that can't balance themselves.
He decided it was time. So he took me on the bike and he held it. And I have a memory of riding that bike and with my dad holding it and running alongside me holding the bike. And then one day, my dad was holding, we left the house and he was holding the bike. And I looked at him and I saw him holding the bike. And the next thing I knew, I looked over at him and he was just running alongside me. He was just jogging alongside me.
I know.
And I was riding and I will never forget that moment. It's etched in my memory forever and ever. And it is one of the most wonderful memories I have of me and my dad because he taught me how to ride a bike.
That's a good thing.
Oh, yeah. It was on that white Schwinn with the basket on it. And I remember falling a lot at first, but I eventually got the hang of it. And I always liked to ride a bike. And then eventually I got a little bit older and I started crossing Route 130.
Oh, that got you in a lot of trouble.
And it got me in trouble.
Yeah.
And so the fun thing is when we go down to do the Princeton Freewheelers event, or if I just go ride with the Princeton Freewheelers, frequently we cross Route 130 and I get very excited when I get to, or even if I'm just at Nancy's house, I get to cross Route 130 a lot and I'm like, yeah, I'm crossing Route 130. Crossing Route 130 is a symbol of freedom to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. But unfortunately, my parents didn't look at that and go, oh, she really loves to ride a bike. Let's get her a coach. Let's put her in a program. They just yelled at me, don't ride. Don't cross
Route
130.
Don't do that. Don't go out there. Yeah. Well, you know, the bicycle is that. It's the freedom machine. You know, it's that thing that we use to establish ourselves and our own personal freedom.
And I don't know if there were programs back then for a little girl who wanted to ride bikes fast. I don't know.
Oh, my gosh. In New Jersey?
Yeah.
Really?
I don't know.
You should ask our friend Bruce about that.
Well, it would be.
Because
it was 1970. Yeah, it was the early 70s.
The 70s were big. Oh. Robin Tracy Lee. I mean, I know people down there that were real involved in cycling down there.
For kids?
Oh, yeah. There was a lot of cycling. You were actually in one of those states between New Jersey and California, probably two of the most opportune states to get involved in cycling as a child.
There's
back in the 70s.
Roads in New Jersey.
And, you know, I mean, the 70s were, it was early. I mean, I was riding my bike a lot in the 70s. I was that weird kid who rode his bike to school. Oh, no, not him.
Everybody had bikes where I lived. Everybody rode a bike.
And everybody had bikes where I lived, too, except that, you know, it was kind of a freakish thing for you to be at driver's license age and be more interested in riding your bicycle than driving a car. So, and I was that kid that just, I loved to ride my bike. I mean,
yeah.
It's just my bike, just, it made sense. It was fun. It was, you know, something I could do that no one else could do, even though they could, but they wouldn't because it wasn't of their interest. So, you know, I would just ride my bike. Just loved riding my bike. Riding my bike is very, very important to me. So, and it's done a lot of good things for me. So anyway, you know, it's those are the things that you remember. But yes, New Jersey, huge. Big development programs down there. Lot going on. You know, my friend Joe, who you met, he was involved with that whole scene back then.
Oh, man.
And you know, a number of other people were involved in that. I mean, it's a pretty big deal. It's a pretty big deal. So it's a thing that you also see in California. There's a lot of development in California. There's a lot of development in Colorado. Those are the primary areas where it is. But it's really happening nationwide now, and we've got a lot going on. Hey, we're going to wrap this thing up because we're coming to an end for our show here. My name is Ron Meneza, also known as Peddlin' Ron. You have been listening to Bicycle Talk with my co-host, Fran Storch. This is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. You can call or text us at 860-486-9487, or if you are listening to us in podcast form, you can email me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. This is 91.7 WHUS Storrs, Connecticut. Next show, we're going to be talking about cyclocross. Thank you for listening.